Senate Capital Investment Committee will come to order. Today is May 7th, and we have two items on the agenda, and I think what we're going to do is to switch the two items around, and we'll take up Senate File 1989 first, and then when Senator Rest comes, I believe she has a meeting that hopefully we can take her when she comes. Maybe we can just recess at that point, or switch at that point, and maybe go back to this if we have additional questions. So I'm going to hand the gavel over to Senator Scalzi, and should we go up there?
Hi, Willis Jr., how are you? I know, I hear you. Robert Street? Heard it. It's a mess.
They're renaming it.
It's a $34 million project. Oh, Jim.
Jim, that's it.
$34 million, it's just...
The meeting of the Senate Capital Investment Committee will come to order. We're going to go a little bit out of order here because we're waiting for another bill author. So we're going to start some testimony with Senator Stumpf, Senate File 1989, and then we may recess when the other chair comes in for her bill. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, have a delete all amendment that I'd like to present. It's A3, and
so Senator Stumpf moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Stumpf.
Hey, the A3 amendment is actually a result of last year's bonding bill. And, the committee works hard to put things get things in the bonding bill. But this is more or less a corrections portion of last year's bonding bill.
I thought it was chill.
There's a number of different things that happen for the interim. It would be nice to know that ahead of time, but things just change. So that's what we have before us. There is, I believe, no spending in this, and it basically deals with a host of different projects. Try to get those back to where they can move ahead. There's one project in here that I think we would probably, I think somebody from the Department of Human Services is going to be here at 9 o'clock if there's any questions about that, and that's a project in St. Peter. But I would ask Ms. James to kind of walk us through and explain each of these changes that we're seeking.
Ms. James, just give us your name for the record. We know who you are, but put it on the record anyway and proceed.
Madam Chair, this is Stephanie James from Senate Council. Section 1 of the bill is from Senator Metzen's Mighty Ducks bill, Senate File 2002, and this puts caps on the air quality and R22 projects for ice rinks to replace the refrigerant in ice rinks across the state. Section 2 is a change to a 2012 appropriation in the bonding bill, and this permits the unspent, it cancels, the project has been abandoned. This is a project at Southwest Minnesota State University, and this allows that money to be used for asset preservation on the campus. Section 3 is a change to appropriation from 2013 that is for the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis. And this change allows them to use the balance that hasn't been expended yet to pre-design and design for the demolition of the south wing of Building 17 and adjoining facilities, and designing the south wing of Building 17 as a new skilled nurses building. Or, well, I should say that the appropriation for those purposes is added to the appropriation for the rest of the project, which is a variety of things that are happening at Building 17 and 18 and a tunnel at the Minneapolis campus. Section 4 is a cancellation of the bonding appropriation for the Bagley Library. The Bagley Library project was already completed by the time the bonding bill came out last year. And so the $50,000 of bonding money that we gave them is something they can't use, because all they needed to do was do furnishing, and that is not a bond-eligible expense. Section 5 is a change to the 2014 appropriation for the Cottage Grove Hero Center, changing the address and changing the entities that will contribute to the match. Section 6 is a change to the 2014 appropriation for the International Falls Airport. It changes the description a little bit to allow phasing so that the airport can go forward with its project. It doesn't have a match for the complete project, and so by phasing it, they have enough match for phase one, and they can get started. Section 7 is a change to a 2014 appropriation for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program buildings at St. Peter, and that's the one that Senator Stumpf mentioned. We'll have testimony at 9 from DHS about exactly the changes that they're making there. Section 8 is a change to the language for a 2014 appropriation for the YWCA in Minneapolis. It should be on line 7.20. That should be YWCA. And their project involves replacing the HVAC and the sprinkler systems and the pool walls and ceiling. And those changes don't all relate to the early childhood center, so they hadn't been able to make use of their appropriation from last year without making this change to the language. Section 9 is a change to the 2014 appropriation for the Alexandria Lakes Area Economic Development Project. They are redeveloping a site that has a high school on it. Originally, they were going to acquire the property, but now it's been gifted to them. And then they are going to install public infrastructure. And this also lowers their match amount and permits that value of the land to be counted towards their match. Section 10 on Lake Elmo Water Supply just changes the name of the street where this project is happening. Section 11 makes changes to the Brian Coyle Community Center language for their appropriation from 2014. The appropriation was for pre-design and design, but they have purchased a plan. And so this change allows them to use the money that we gave them on construction. Section 12 on page 10 modifies an appropriation from 2014 for the St. Paul Historic Palace Theater renovation, just changing the entity that's getting the grant money. Section 13 is a variety of changes to the appropriation from 2014 for the Highway 53 utility relocation. That project has been changes have been made, and it's been redefined, and at least parts of the trail that's affiliated with the, or that had been going along the highway, is being relocated, in some cases quite a ways away from the road, and so part of the changes are for that. Also, there are different communities involved than we had originally provided in the original language, so there are changes to the entities that are receiving money. Section 14 is a change to the bond sale expenses, and we've got a blank in there now, but that'll be to accommodate the Bagley cancellation from last year. Similarly, Section 15, the change to the authorization amount from last year, will also be to accommodate the Bagley project. Section 16 is a change to the 2014 cash appropriation to the St. Paul Minnesota Children's Museum. This lowers the match amount. Section 17 is new language, and this is a provision that is not a change from an earlier appropriation. And this provides that the Minneapolis Community and Technical College will be selling the Aviation Training Center at the Flying Cloud Airport. They operate it, and it's going to be sold. And this provision appropriates that money, the sale proceeds, to MNSCU to be used for asset preservation, and provides that the property will no longer be considered a state bond finance property and subject to those constraints.
Madam Chair?
Senator Stump.
If we could just interrupt this this presentation, and then Senator Rest is here. I know she has another meeting a little bit later. Come back to this, if that's all right.
So the 1989 A3 amendment, we'll take a recess with that amendment, and then we will at this time bring in Senator Rest, who has Senate File 1784, and then we'll return to the 1989 A3 amendment. Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I also want to apologize to Senator Stump and to the members for my tardiness. I took a spill at my house this morning and twisted my hip.
Oh.
And I've just been moving very slowly.
Well, let's hope that the day turns out better after
I
that.
Hope so. Madam Chair, I have the Senate File 1784, and I have a delete all amendment.
So Senator Rest moves the 1784 A6 amendment.
Madam Chair, I think somebody on the committee.
She's not
under
committee.
Senator Metzen moves 1784 A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Senator
Thank
Rest.
You, Madam Chair. This proposal is a proposal that would encourage, if not require, all new buildings that have public hearing rooms that are equipped with amplification hearing to have is that better?
Yeah.
Is to have assistive listening systems that are called loops. Those of us that wear hearing aids and are otherwise hard of hearing can benefit from such a system when it is in place in a public space. The proposal does not look to put the system into every private office, for example. That is not the point. It is in a public hearing room, such as this one, if it were in a new building, where the system could be installed as the amplification equipment is installed, and it would allow those with hearing aids to I don't know how to explain it, but it totally wipes away the ambient noise, and it is a night and day difference for people to be able to hear what is being spoken into microphones such as those that are in front of you, without being distracted by any kind of ambient noise out in the hall or even other muffled conversations inside the room. This looping technology is a preferred way to achieve good acoustics because, as I indicated, they transmit the sound directly to most hearing aids, and for those that have cochlear implants, it does the same for them. we are required to make available some sort of technology, according to ADA, for those who have some sort of sensory deprivation conditions, like being hard of hearing. And this is the technology that is preferred. We wanted to make sure that we did not, however, just say, well, every building has to have this. And so in the amendment that you adopted, not only is the accommodation made for the hard of hearing in state-funded capital projects, new ones, but there is discretion given to agency heads to make a judgment about whether in a particular setting, in a new building, whether it is feasible, whether it perhaps conflicts with other provisions in the law. And I'm now just reading from the amendment that it is in conflict with other project requirements, or certainly that it adds more than 5% to the cost of the project within that particular space in a building. And whichever commissioner is involved in the project is required to consult with the Commission of Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesota before making the determination that it conflicts with another law, it's not feasible, et cetera. And then in the Subdivision 3, the term public gathering space is defined, and I think it's just a common sense definition. You may be interested to know that the new Minnesota Senate building across the street here is the auditorium and the smaller auditorium, which is where the Senate will be holding its chamber sessions next year, is equipped with looping technology, as is the – it's already in the plans. They were ahead of themselves, actually, as are the other hearing rooms in the building. So I hope that you will look favorably on including this. It's a requirement, but it's a very gentle one because if it works, it's called to people's attention. I mean, if it's possible, it's called to people's attention to include it. And if it is, if it's not feasible for any reason, then there can be a waiver from the requirement.
So, Senator Rest, do you have any idea what the added costs of our project might be? I see that you in the delete all you say more than if it adds more than 5%. Do you have an estimation of what that might be to a project?
I don't know, but it's not going to add millions of dollars to anything. And I don't know. I think we have a couple of people here who can give you more specific information. But we put a percentage rather than a dollar amount because, you know, if it's this room, probably a whole lot cheaper than a 500-seat auditorium, let's say, for example. But they can certainly
okay, so you have your testifiers here. Please give your name for the record, who's going to start, and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, Beth Fraser with the Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. Thank you for taking the time to hear this bill. In terms of cost, we asked the Department of Administration how much it added to the cost at the Senate office building, and they said it was about $16,000, which in the overall scope of the project is very small. It would obviously vary depending upon the exact requirements of the room. The other piece of the bill also requires that that these rooms meet certain acoustical standards. And these standards were have been adopted at a national level. And several years ago, the legislature said that school districts had to look at the standards when building classrooms. And last year, the School District Association said, let's stop looking at the standards and just require them all the time, because they make such a difference for students in terms of the ability to hear and add so little to the cost of building new schools. It should just be a requirement. So the school districts themselves said, please make this a requirement. So a different part of the statute already makes these acoustical standards a requirement of classrooms around the state, and we want to make them a requirement of other rooms where it's important to be able to hear what's being said. So that kind of answers the cost question. I wanted to... briefly.
We have a question here. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just before you go on to the next item, in the Senate office building, Senator Ress, did you say there were two areas that were covered, the two auditoriums?
At least those two, Madam Chair, Senator Stump, the large auditorium, and then there is a smaller auditorium, or you can... I mean, I think they. When you look at them, you're going to say it's an auditorium rather than a hearing room, but they certainly can be used, either one of them, for large hearings. And for the Senate next year, the smaller one will be used as our chamber for the 2016 session.
And
follow up, Senator Stump.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In a school... would they do every classroom or just the auditorium, or how do they usually approach it?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, there are two separate requirements in the bill. So one is that it meets certain acoustical standards. And so that is already required of classrooms. The second requirement in the bill is for the hearing loops. And under the bill, I believe that would be required of auditoriums. And so it would, the acoustical standards would be required of rooms with more than 15 people, where hearing is an integral to use of the space, whereas the hearing loops are required where there is some sort of amplification system.
Okay. So,
Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, in a classroom, there would not necessarily be a need for an amplification system, but more...
But good acoustics.
Acoustical type of material they use or whatever in the construction. Is that correct?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, yes. And it's already required in law of classrooms. So this is just extending it to other public rooms where hearing is important.
So, Ms. Fraser, can you tell us if the loop is already required in classrooms, or is this a new requirement?
Madam Chair, the loop...
This is in four school.
This is in four school.
Right. So the difference... I'm sorry, Madam Chair and members. The difference is in Subdivision 1, Paragraph 1, the loop is only required... in buildings, it says on 1.9, that have a permanent audio amplification system. So loops are only required where you're already going to have microphones and the capability of using the system. The acoustical standards are the only thing that are currently required in classrooms and that would be required in rooms that seat more than 15 people but that do not have an amplification system.
And Senator Stump, any more questions related to that? Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, I'm still trying to sort it out in my head.
We do have an example so that you can understand what a great difference this makes. And Ms. Fraser has it on her recording.
Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Members. So the hearing loops have been installed in places throughout the United States, some theaters, some churches, some public libraries, and Owatonna, I believe, has it in their public meeting room. So this is a recording from YouTube, which is done in a church. And so first you will hear what it sounds like without the without use of the loop, and then the person turns on, just by pressing a button on their hearing aid, what it hears like using the loop technology.
The farmer waits for the precious crop of the earth.
So that's with the technology.
Receives the early and the late rains.
That's without it. So you can see that there's clearly, it clearly makes a difference in terms of somebody's ability to hear and to understand what's being said through a microphone.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser. We've got a couple of questions. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I understand the need for this, especially as we have 10,000 baby boomers hitting 65 each and every year for the next 19 years. There are going to be more and more of us who will definitely benefit from this type of assistance. And I support the concept here. I just have a couple questions. And one has to do with the 5% or the cost of the project. And I'm thinking it might be better to limit that to the cost of the project where the amplification is. So in other words, if you're taking 5% of a $80 million building, I think that would not be the direction. Yep. And so maybe there's some clarifying language to get to that point.
Madam Chair,
Senator Rest.
Senator Nelson, that's a great question. And we did struggle with how to, what words to use to indicate that we really are talking about 5% of the part of the project in which there is an amplification system to start with. So if redoing this room costs $200,000, then what's 5% of that? You could spend $4,000 or whatever on putting in the looping. It's not going to be that this building renovation is $300 million and you take 5% of that to do anything under that would be available for the looping. Certainly if the committee has better language to indicate that limitation, we would certainly welcome it.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate getting that on the record, and I don't know if council can come up with some language right here, but I do think it's important that we get that language in the bill before us so it very clearly defines what the what it is that is 5% of. So that would be helpful, and maybe I'll ask just my other question while council's determining.
Yes, and I did want to also say that we will be laying this bill over for future consideration so council would have a chance to work with Senator Rest.
Wonderful. I'll bring that amendment then. My other question,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has to do with waivers, with granted waivers. And I know in some instances there's been this concern that waivers are being asked for and they're not being granted. And so I would like to see just a small little reporting piece on here just so we have better idea about how it's working, which is, you know, how many waivers have been requested, how many have been granted. I think that would help us going forward. And so maybe council can, I'd like to offer an amendment that there be that type of reporting requirement. Well, maybe I should ask
Senator Rest. We would have no objection to that either, because that we want to know if it's being done, and if it's not being done, what are the reasons?
Yes,
and there's a lot of outs here. in terms of trying to be extremely reasonable with new buildings. And I think we probably would find more waivers would tend to be granted in projects that were renovations rather than new projects.
Yes. So,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Senator Rest. So maybe that council could work on that too, kind of a reporting process that would help us better get a feel for what's working and why it's not, or how many waivers are being asked for and granted, that type of thing. Thank you.
And we have another question from Senator Newman. Oh, he passed.
Answered my question.
And Senator Rest, it appeared that your other testifier wanted to speak, so maybe we'll move to that. So please give your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Rick Nelson. I am the president of Loop Minnesota, which is a nonprofit organization. We are an advocacy group. We are all volunteers. And I am also a constituent of Senator Rest. I am here as a hard of hearing person, and I can tell you that this room right here is horrific for hearing, for somebody who has hearing aids and hard of hearing. As Senator Rest was speaking, and I was sitting in the chair behind me here, I had all I could do to hear what was being said, and even the little bit of shuffling that was going around in the room was distracting my hearing. Now, I could turn my hearing aid up, but it wouldn't do any good because all it would do is it would amplify the rest of the ambient noise. But if this room was looped and I put the switch on to my telecoil and my hearing aids, it basically zones out the rest of that noise, and I would hear just what's coming through that microphone. And it's so clear that anybody who I've seen experience it is blown away by this technology. There's a lot of reasons for this technology and why this bill is so important. There is other assisted listening devices. Unfortunately, there's a lot of downsides to them. They work, but they do not eliminate the ambient sounds. You have to go to find a headset, find out where to get it. Is it clean? Is it going to be charged? Is it going to be maintained? It basically just amplifies sound. The beauty of the loop system is you have hearing aids that are, they're programmed to your hearing loss. And because they're programmed to your hearing loss, it's not just sound amplification. It's delivering that sound to your prescription. So I can hear a correction based on my hearing loss, if that makes sense to you. And so that's why it's so clear. Speech recognition is so much better when you have it delivered in that manner. So there's a number of other issues. One, you know, wearing a headset is not always comfortable. This is a technology you're not required to wear a headset with because you can use your own hearing aids. And so if you walk into a room and they have a little sign, there's a sign to let people know if the room is looped or not. And if it's looped, you can turn on your telecoil and nobody else would know if you're hard of hearing or not. You don't have to go look for other technology. It's not directional. Some of the technology out there is directional. If you're not pointing the right way or there's something interfering with the line of beam, if you will, it's going to be interrupted. So there's many, many advantages to using an induction loop system. And I think that the goal of this bill, as I see it, is to really bring the standard up of providing quality hearing systems for those of us who struggle. And I'll add one more thing to the cost part. That 5% was really only designed to give you an out, if you will. The chances of a system ever coming close to 5% of the project cost is probably nil. It's very unlikely.
Well, thank you for your testimony. And Senator Rest, did you have anything further that you wanted to say related to this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just point out to members that there are there were some handouts in their packets, that the first one demonstrating how, quote, that was from the New York Times, how the flip of a switch using this technology has the result that has been described by the witnesses, and then letters of support from the Minnesota Academy of Audiology and also the chair of the Department of Speech, Language, Hearing Sciences at the University of Minnesota, that as we go forward, it's not about, you know, going backwards, as we go forward with new projects, that we pay attention to the technology that is indeed available to us right now, that will make such a big difference in people's lives who are hard of hearing, and who, and this is the second hearing on this bill, and each time I have forgotten to put my hearing aids in. But they really are right over there in my purse, and it really does make a difference. When I turn them up in the conference committees, 15 is awful. It's worse than this room. And when I turn them up, what I hear are the conversations of the staff behind me. I hear as much of that distracting conversation as I do the comments of the conferees on the other side of the table. So if that room were looped and I had the little gadget there, I could just hit that and I would hear only what was coming from the microphones, and it would be so much easier to focus on the conversation that was at the conference committee, rather than having somebody talking about, well, did you see so-and-so sitting over there? Or what are you going to do for lunch?
Yes. And thank you, anyway. Senator Rest. And any further questions from senators? Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Rest, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I assume that the legislature could always adjust the language if needed, but I was just thinking as we were looking at it, that is the audio amplification system with audio induction loops, as the technology changes, which it certainly will, is that broad enough to encompass new technology that maybe might be described differently in the future?
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, either one of my testifiers has far more experience and expertise in responding to Senator Stevens' questions, but it's also a very good question.
Okay. Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, it's a great question. This technology is not brand new. It's been around for a long time. In Europe, looping has been around. It almost everything is looped in Europe. Even in New York, New York City has a lot of loop technology installed. Even in their cabs there, they have loops installed. But to more directly answer your question, loop technology is not going to go out of style. There will be other technologies that will come available. There's Bluetooth technology now. However, they don't have it anywhere close to solution where they could provide it in a large environment, so you can go from your phone to your hearing aids with a wireless and things of that nature. And there is some other wireless technology out there, but my understanding from discussing with industry experts is that we won't even see that technology probably come to light in the next 15 to 20 years.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
we understand, or I understand the looping, how important that is. Actually, my church is looped, so I get that. Might sound a little odd, but certainly I understand the need and the clarification that we have coming with the amendments. But the second piece of this bill I know nothing about, which is the American National Standards Institute Acoustical Performance Criteria Design Requirements and Guidelines. To me, that's the really big unknown in this bill, because I have no idea, and I'm guessing many of us here at the table do not know, what does that entail? And while we're glad to know our classrooms are now being built that way, what does that entail, and what kind of cost would that incur on buildings? And so that's the one piece that I would like to know more about, is really what are those guidelines? You know, give us some examples of if we were building a new room that had to meet these guidelines, what are some of the things that would need to be in that room and some of the costs incurred with that?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I would need to do some more research or need to review what exactly the guidelines are. But my understanding from a fiscal note from many years ago when we first started asking school districts to at least look at the guidelines was the estimated additional cost at that point was 0.5% to up to 2%. And again, the school districts came back last year and voluntarily said, stop having us just look at the guidelines. Let's just always comply with them because they make such a huge difference. My understanding is that acoustics can really impact, of course, not only people who are hard of hearing, but people who are hearing themselves, and that even people who are hearing in rooms with poor acoustics can miss up to one-third of what is said, and that, you know, building in the acoustics really helps children in classrooms and other people hear what's being said. I understand there was a study in New York City many years ago where they looked at test scores in this school, and the children on the east side of the school had much, much lower test scores than those on the west side of the school. It depended where their classrooms were. And they realized the subway went by the east side of the school, and it was literally the noise was inhibiting their hearing, inhibiting their learning. And so building, you know, changing the standards so that people can actually hear can, you know, really make a difference in people's hearing and understanding. So I'm happy to get you more information, but, you know, it sounds like the costs are very minimal, that the school districts have, you know, now require this of themselves or asked you to require it of them because they saw what a huge difference it made and what low costs it had.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions from members or from anyone else in the room who would like to testify? If not, Senator Rest, any further comments?
No, Madam Chair. I just I do hope that you will, the committee will look favorably on moving forward in this direction, and we would hope to provide you with additional information and work with Senator Nelson and Ms. James for clarifying amendments, and we'll get you information about those guidelines.
Senator Nelson.
I just forgot one question before we leave this. Tell me about the Capitol renovation. How is the Capitol renovation regarding the chambers, the hearing rooms? Is this already being considered, or is this going to be another cost item to that? What's the status on that?
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I don't know what is being already done in the Capitol renovation. Was more interested in what's happening in new buildings that the state is constructing, such as the Senate building. And we'll find that out, whether the acoustics, whether the improvement in the acoustics in room 15, and I think all of us probably have had a committee or two that meets in room 15 and know how horrible it is. But I would hope that the acoustic standards are being met there, and I'll find that out too.
So, Senator Nelson.
So I appreciate that. And then the other thing would be, once the legislation takes, we hope this moves forward and it takes effect. Once its effective date, then I would assume that projects that are already on the drawing board prior to that effective date would not. So I think there needs to be some clarification here.
Sure.
About when it applies to which projects that were the design was approved after enactment or something like that.
Senator Rest.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Nelson. I think it's also important to keep in mind is that a lot of renovation projects that involve improving the acoustics in a public space as well as new buildings, they're already doing this because they realize what a service it is. So it's not some sort of new regulation in that sense that is not voluntarily being done. It just seemed like with regard to projects that are sponsored by the state is paying for that these acoustic standards and not only acoustic standards but this looping technology to be available for those of us that wear hearing aids, that we should put that in the RFP.
And we have just one last question from Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to some extent in line with what's just being discussed. Senator Rest, I don't see an effective date in either your underlying bill or your lead all. Is that by intent or omission?
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, no, I would assume if as it goes in, if it's put in your larger bill, that there would be an appropriate effective date for projects begun after a certain date, and that could be part of the amendment.
Okay, so Senator Rest, you have some work to do with Senator Nelson and Ms. James to get this bill in the shape that you'd like it to be. And with that, then we'll lay this bill aside for further consideration. Thank you. Thanks to your testifiers. And then we'll move back to the agenda with Ms. James and Senator Stump looking at 1989 with the delete all A3 amendment. Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, there was, I believe, somebody here from the Department of Human Services that I hope.
And I believe, Ms. James, were you complete with your walkthrough, or did you want to continue where you left off?
Madam Chair, Stephanie James, Senate Council, we were on Section 18, which is on page 13 of the amendment. Section 18 permits the Commissioner of Administration to convey a specified piece of land to Hennepin County at no cost. That piece of land will continue to be considered a state bond finance property and therefore subject to constraints on that. Section 19 is a conveyance of two schools. These have been bond financed in the past, so that's why they're in the bill.
Lovenier.
It's two fair schools. One is in downtown Minneapolis and one is in Crystal. And this permits the conveyance of those to independent school districts. Section 20 provides for some federal money that's coming in to reimburse the state for capital expenditures at McQuaid Harbor. It designates that money for three projects. One is at Knife River, one is at Grand Marais, and one is at Two Harbors.
Thank you, Ms. James. Senator Stump, you have other testifiers?
Is there someone here from DHS?
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Johnston, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program.
So, Ms. Johnston, we'll be looking at, as I understand it, Section 7 for members of the committee, which is the Minnesota Sex Offender Program in St. Peter. Is that correct, Ms. Johnston?
That's correct, Ms. Chair.
And proceed with your testimony.
This amendment basically just changes the order, the timeline in which we want to do design and renovation of buildings on the St. Peter campus. when the bonding proposal was originally initiated. We were continuing to receive clients at a pretty quick rate into the program. Since that time, our growth is slowing down, but what we are seeing is growth in our Community Preparation Services program, which is our program outside the secure perimeter. The courts are moving clients at a very fast pace and transferring clients from the secure perimeter to the Community Prep Services in St. Peter. This amendment just changes the order in which we were going to renovate buildings. It moves our plan to begin renovation of our Sunrise building as the next part of the Phase 1 and Phase 2, and it pushes out the renovation of the Bartlett building to 2018. It's cost neutral. There's no additional cost. It literally just switches the timeline of the design and construction.
Thank you for that clarification. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Senator Newman, did you have a question?
Yeah, just more of a comment, Madam Chair. Excuse me, for DHS and committee members. I continue to be concerned about the sex offender program in Minnesota, given the lawsuit that is currently ongoing. I expect that Judge Frank will be making a decision on this matter the middle of next month. Where it would go from there, we don't know whether it would be decided, whether it would be appealed. And I just want to send up a warning flag that, I have read the recommendation of the task force that Judge Frank used or utilized, at least in part, in whatever upcoming decision he is going to make. And the reason I'm bringing it up is that as a legislature, I don't think that we yet know what is going to happen to that program. And we simply don't know whether the projects and the improvements and the buildings so forth in St. Peter are going to be appropriate or not. So just humor me for a moment. Let's pretend that as a legislature, we decide to go with indeterminate sentencing for sex offenders and send them to prison rather than continuing with civil commitments at St. Peter. The total number of commitments at St. Peter, I would expect, would go down significantly. And the sex offender program would then be implemented while offenders are in prison rather than under civil commitment. So I'm not suggesting that's going to happen. What I'm saying is we don't know. And this lawsuit that has been ongoing now for about 3 years is finally coming to a head or to a conclusion at the trial level, but not necessarily at the appellate level. I'm simply suggesting that we proceed with a little bit of caution as to how much money we're going to spend on the sex offender program in St. Peter until we actually have the legislature weigh in and make a decision as to what we're going to do with it. That's my only suggestion. Thank you, Manager.
And the Capital Investment Committee has visited St. Peter, and we have moved, have taken testimony and have made some movement. And here we have another amendment today. So it's, you're right, Senator Newman, is something that is coming forward. So, Senator Stump, did you have anything to say about this provision?
Madam Chair and committee members, I think in our visit to the sex offenders program there, I certainly was impressed with that transition facilities. Now, it's my thinking that Judge Frank probably will try to move that along faster so that there's some of the sex offenders will have probably another step, which will be outside of the security hospital. And that's where I think it's difficult for the legislature, because then you're dealing with our communities outside of a secure facility. But I do think that there's still a pretty large number of sex offenders that are down upstream, I guess, up at Moose Lake, that the normal transition would be for them to come to St. Peter as well. Because I think St. Peter is kind of the exit point into before they go out and back into communities around the state, if that's the plan. So I think, Senator Newman, you're certainly right. I think different states have taken different approaches in changing their laws as to what kind of a sentence sex offenders would receive, but given the plan, I think St. Peter's sex offender program, that would be a question I would have for the department as well, is that do they need additional transitional housing? I mean, is the flow of sex offenders from Moose Lake slowing because there's fewer coming into Moose Lake, or is it slowing because there's no? I'm not sure. That I guess that would be helpful to know that type of information.
And Ms. Johnston, do you have the answer to that?
Yes, if I may. Separate from what Judge Frank eventually orders, we have many, many men in the pipeline, so to speak, that are going through the court process today. We have 38 beds at Community Prep Services currently with 34 men living there. Just this morning, two more were transferred by the court. The order came through this morning. So what's happening is our CPS program is filling up by court order from the Supreme Court Appeals Panel, and we currently have 30 beds that were bonded and are currently being built and will open in July, which will give us some relief. But to plan for the future for those men that are already in the pipeline, if you will, of the court process, they are going to continue to be ordered by the court to leave the secure perimeter, separate from what Judge Frank does or doesn't do in the upcoming weeks.
Further questions, Senator Newman?
Yeah, just further comment. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Stumpf. I don't disagree with anything that you have said. I am simply saying that, you know, we do not know what Judge Frank is going to order. We simply don't. And to, you know, it's just pure guess. I kind of agree with you. I think he's going to issue an order that is going to move things along a lot faster than it would have occurred without his order. That I do agree with. But we don't know what he's going to tell us as a state that we have to do. After we receive that order, the next step in the process is the legislature is simply going to, we're going to have to weigh in and address this issue. And so when I made that statement, I'm thinking both in terms of the men that are in the pipeline, so to speak. I know we have to deal with those, and I know we have to deal with those who are under civil commitment. But moreover, we're talking about capital investments here. And we do not know, as we sit here today, prospectively, what is going to be the nature of the sex offender program in the state of Minnesota, because we don't have the court order and we don't have the legislation. And so I'm just urging a little bit of caution before we spend immense amount of money on projects down in St. Peter. We have to know what we as a legislature and as a state are going to do with this program before we spend that money, before we commit. And once we know what the future holds for us, then I think we can weigh in and act. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
And Senator Stump.
Just one additional comment. I believe that this change will have no impact on the security hospital, the renovation of the security hospital. That is going to continue to go on time or with the construction. So this provision is not building toward more facility, or it's just a rearranging of which facility. If you remember down at St. Peter, there's a number of buildings, and what they're doing is instead of doing the order that we were given last year, they're changing the order. So I think what you're saying, Senator Newman, is that this doesn't have or will not have an impact on, you know, creating additional construction there by itself. This is just kind of carrying out what we had approved last year.
So are there any questions from members on other parts of this amendment? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have two brief questions. One is, what happened to the library at Bagley? And what happens to the money that was appropriated? I can't tell if it's given, you know, I just want to know what happened to that money and maybe why there wasn't a library. And then secondly, answer that question first, if you would, please, and then I'll get to my second.
Senator Stump.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I might have to refer back to Senate Counsel. The circumstances on which that were somewhat, and I think other provisions in here, the same thing happened, is that, you know, you try to get as much information about projects as you can before you move ahead. And in this case, it has to do with they wanted to, part of the project last year was furnishings, and we could not bond for the furnishings in the library with GO bonds. And so that was the issue. The bonds were not, they just canceled back or just weren't sold.
So, Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and Senator Stump and Senator Nelson, yes, the Bagley project, we found out after the fact, was really already complete. They just needed furnishings, and we can't use bond money, as Senator Stump said, for that. So in the bill, we're just eliminating that appropriation from last year.
Senator Nelson.
And then, thank you. And then my second question had to do with the Section 13 on page 10, the Virginia Highway 53 utilities relocation. And I noticed that the new language includes that this appropriation does not require a non-state match. And so I wondered, well, why that is and if there's precedent for that and what had the required match been, and then why are we not requiring it now?
So, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I can probably answer, but I'll let Mr. Cervenic go ahead and give.
Yes, Mr. Please state your name for the record and tell
Thank
us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gary Cervenic, and I represent the City of Virginia, the Virginia Public Utilities, and the Mesaba Trail in this project. And, Senator, the original appropriation did not require any state match, primarily because it is beyond the city and the Railroad authorities control the relocation of Highway 53 is a state issue. And so this legislation does not change what was passed in the previous legislature.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. But this is new language to say this appropriation does not require a non-state match. And so why is that new language if, in fact, it didn't require a non-state match before?
Ms. James. Mr. Cervenic.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, the reason for that specific provision related to the $500,000 substation that it applies to is that we had to take of the $19.5 million, $0.5 million directly related to a substation because that needs to be in place prior to the movement of the rest of the utilities. And so on the advice of management and budget, the bond council, we move that into this separate section as a fully funded project, not related to the other $19 million of the construction, which are storm and sanitary sewer, electrical and gas utilities, and the trail.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
And this might be a question for Ms. James then. So is it normal to not have, to not require a match for something like a substation? Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, I don't know that there's any particular protocol for us to waive a match requirement specifically for a substation. In this case, in this paragraph, they're waiving it for this one portion of the project, and Mr. Cervenek said that the original bill permitted the whole project to go forward without a match, but I'm not seeing that in the language. So,
Senator Stump.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I think if I reflect back on the original language, what happened up here, and I could be stand to be corrected, but is that the MnDOT or the state of Minnesota made an agreement with the mines that when they would get to that road, that the state of Minnesota would move the road because they own the land under the road, and so they agreed that they would pay the full cost of moving the road. I don't think we'd do that now again, because it's this is the second time they moved that road now.
Mr. Cervenek.
First.
Okay.
First time.
So it didn't sound like a great deal. When I first found out that, you know, it was the state's full responsibility to take care of that, the cost of that road. So it would actually, the match, if there was a match, would come from MnDOT, right?
And Mr. Cervenek is shaking his head yes. So, and we did visit that project, the Capital Investment Committee. I remember it well. And this is one of those cases where the road had to be moved because the land under was owned by a mine. And Senator Nelson.
Well, so my question isn't about the project. I understand the project, and it sounds like it's the state's responsibility. My question just is about not requiring a non-state match, and whether that's, it looks like it's new language. And so my question is, what would that match have been without lines 10.33 and 10.34?
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, typically for local projects, we require a 50-50 match. As Senator Stumpf has described, this isn't exactly that kind of local project, perhaps. But typically the match is 50-50.
And then just my final question.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. James, can you clarify for me then, did the original appropriation require a non-state match?
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, there's nothing in the language that exempted them from the local match in the original language, as far as I can see. It may have been the intent, but I don't know that we got it into the language last year.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cervenek.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, I don't have the original language in front of me, but I strongly recall that it did not require a local match. And if you look on line 11.24, for the grant to the St. Louis Lake County Regional Railroad Authority, this appropriation does not require a state match. What we're trying to do in this amendment is we're trying to separate out the three projects between the City of Virginia, the Virginia Public Utilities, and the Railroad Authority. And I believe perhaps we found an error here, that the intent is to require none of those sections of the act. It requires state match, like it was the intent in the last session to do the same.
So,
Senator Nelson.
One final question. So I understand on page 11 why it does not, why the language is there that says this does not require state match, because the project has been expanded in this amendment to cover additional areas, and so you need to specify that there's a non-state match required in these new areas, Eveleth, Gilbert, and Fayal Township. I understand that, but I'm still unclear about whether the original legislation did require a match or not, and I think that's a significant, it's a question that the committee should be aware of, and so if it did not require a state match in the past, then I would move that we delete those words in this amendment before us, because that would indicate by adding this as new language that in the past it did require a state match.
And perhaps what we might do, this bill is going to be laid over as amended. We may work with council and Senator Nelson to clarify that, and if that language is not needed, that could be amended at a later date.
And thank you. And Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. And if in fact it is the will of this committee that a non-state match be not required, I just think we need to know that, and it needs to be very clear at this table that that's the case and why that would be.
And Senator Sieben. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, and Senator Nelson, I was the author of this, and I don't remember there being any state match required, so.
Well, I guess we'll get to look it up.
Yes. Thank you.
Senator Sieben. Well,
Madam Chair, I just wanted to speak in favor of what the desire to not have a non-state match, because I think this is really essential work that gets done, and as has been stated, and I remember looking at the project, it's not these cities' fault that they need to relocate this road, so it just makes sense that we not have a non-state match.
Any further discussion on this particular issue from members of the committee? If not, we will lay over Senate File 1989, the A3 amendment as adopted today. Any further business for you, Senator Stump?
I think that's it. There's probably this will be. On the table for consideration, I think.
Thank you, Senators. With that, the meeting is adjourned.